Now we continue this deepening as we dive into cultivating the wild and sacred, something that is near and dear to me personally. Modern culture has really numbed many of us to the most primal and natural parts of ourselves, and we need to reawaken them to heal ourselves as well as our planet. With our individual wholeness restored, we can embark on a journey which leads to our initiation as visionary artisans of a cultural renaissance. We can truly become not only planetary healers, but also co-creationists in the ongoing evolution of Earth. Well, now we get to hear from two people who have worked to fully embody these qualities in themselves and masterfully draw them forth in others. I first experienced Ra Goddess, whom we heard from earlier today, doing an awesome talk and performance at the Bioneers Conference a few years ago. Ra is the entrepreneurial soul coach, empowering hundreds of breakthrough change makers, cultural visionaries, and social entrepreneurs to stay true, get paid, and do good. I love that. Her mission is to revolutionize the way we live, work, and play and handle our business. Her work has been featured in Time Magazine, Ms. Magazine, and the Chicago Tribune, and she has galvanized a movement of 1 million entrepreneurs dedicated to reimagining work as a vehicle for creative expression, financial freedom, and societal transformation. Her website is movethecrowd.me, M-E. We also get to hear from Bill Plotkin. Bill is a PhD, a depth psychologist, wilderness guide, and agent of cultural evolution. As founder of Animas Valley Institute, based in Colorado, he has guided thousands of women and men through nature-based initiatory passages. He's also been a professor of psychology, a rock musician, and whitewater river guide. Bill is the author of an experiential guidebook called Soulcraft, Crossing into the Mysteries of Nature and Psyche, a nature-based model of human development entitled Nature and the Human Soul, Cultivating Wholeness and Community in a Fragmented World, and finally, Wild Mind, a Field Guide to the Human Psyche. I love those titles. His website is animas.org. That's animas.org. Well, let's start. First of all, welcome. Welcome, Ra and Bill, to Earth Day Summit. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Well, let's start the conversation off by discussing what wild and sacred mean to us. Now, let's start with Bill on this. So what do we mean by wild and sacred, Bill?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's been a lot of beautiful thinking and speaking about that. The way I've come to understand wild is it means anything in the universe that exists in its wholeness, in its fullness, the way it was born to be. And for me, the sacred is anything that participates in and partners with the great mystery of the world, this extraordinarily mysterious universe. And one of the synonyms for sacred that a lot of people use is holy. Now, that's an interesting word because it's a lot like the word whole, with a W in front.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, our holiness, or the holiness of the world, is the wholeness of the world as well. So in that sense, the wild and the sacred are very aligned ideas. And I like to think that everything that's born or that has evolved is wild, as long as it continues to function in its wholeness. And so I often think that before there were human persons on Earth, everything was wild and sacred. And after humans appeared, we began to have some things made or manufactured by humans, some of the things that are not wild and sacred. So one of the big questions and challenges for us at this time on the planet is how can we restore our wholeness, or as I like to say, how do we rewild ourselves so that everything we do and everything we make is is sacred and wild again.
Beautiful. Ra, what would you say? What's wild and sacred to you?
I love, Bill, what, you know, this conversation of wholeness, because I do think that that is the ground. And so when I think of wild, I think about those most vibrant and authentic parts of ourselves, the parts that that really represent the essence of who we are, those parts of us that are like the thumbprint. And the sacred for me, you know, I see a deep connection, because often those parts require a certain level of courage or trust or vulnerability to share. And yet when we share them and when we express them, there is a way that we are connected to source. So when I think of sacred, I think of connected to the source, connected to the root of creation. And whatever way we call that love, we call that creativity, we call that, you know, by many names. But this idea that when we touch the mystery, we really are touching on some level the source of all creation. So.
Thank you for that. Why is it important to reawaken these primal and natural parts of ourselves? Why are these parts so dormant today, and what about our modern culture is suppressing them? You can, I'll just put that out there, and feel free to jump in on that, either of you.
Yeah, okay. boy, it's absolutely essential, yeah, that we restore our own wholeness, so that we can be, so we can restore the wholeness of the earth. I guess everybody who's been paying attention knows that it's us humans, the way we've been present on the planet for the last few hundred or maybe a few thousand years, has really compromised the wildness and the sacredness and the wholeness of the world. So it's essential that we restore our own wholeness so that we can participate in this great mystery of the world again. And it's really coming down. I think everybody knows it's a time of crisis, which is also, of course, a time of opportunity. We know that from the way the whole universe story, that the times of greatest crisis are also the times of greatest opportunity. But there's no guaranteed outcome, and so it's really essential. And your second question, I think partly you have your own answer in there about why is our wholeness, why is it dormant today? It does have something to do with our contemporary mainstream cultures have suppressed our wholeness for many centuries, if not millennia. And the way we raise children, educational systems, some aspects of our religious systems, entertainment, government, just so many aspects of our mainstream culture. It's almost as if the mainstream contemporary Western culture has been designed to suppress our wholeness. It's in that our wholeness is a danger. It's subversive to the mainstream culture. And the corollary is that we need our wholeness, all aspects of our wholeness, in order to create or invent or new cultures, or to have renaissance of our current culture.
Yes. And Ra, what would you say?
I love Bill's grace there, where he says it's almost like it's been designed. I feel that it's been a very intentional design of the culture to indoctrinate in a way that supports conformity for various reasons. And I think that this opportunity to, you know, to look at all of the ways that we are indoctrinated, whether that's through the ideologies that, you know, that permeate our culture, whether it's through the institutions, whether it's through our interpersonal interactions, and what we've internalized ourselves as a result of all the conditioning that has, you know, really compromised and challenged our ability to be in the fullness of ourselves. And I think that, you know, this opportunity to awaken and embody and express that fullness is in some ways going to require, you know, yes, in some ways being subversive, but also I'm going to say in standing up and confronting and challenging much of what exists in the status quo that does not promote wholeness, that does not promote healthiness, whether we're talking about individuals or whether we're talking about the state of our planet. And so, you know, I think this is sort of takes me back to the courage piece. You know, it takes something to resist conformity. It takes something to buck the status quo. And so, you know, there's a wildness also in our willingness to break free that I think is critical to addressing where and how we've been suppressed.
Yeah, well,
I was going to say I agree so much. I just wanted to add one thing, that is, I am certain that every single human being is born wild and sacred. It's not something we become. We're born that way. And if we live in a culture that's not so healthy like the contemporary Western world, our wildness, our wholeness is compromised. But when we live in healthy cultures, our wholeness and our wildness is celebrated and brought into its fullness. And so the question for us now in the contemporary world is not so much how do we make tame beings wild, but how do we embrace the wildness that has always been us and existed in us and restore that and celebrate it and amplify it.
Great point, and we do see that in many indigenous tribes that are still intact. Their practices, their culture, their rituals all support that, and we see the health and vitality of people in tribes like that as a result of that. So great point. And really, I see in both of you the courage to bring forth that part in yourself, and not only that, but to support that being brought forth in other people, and it's beautiful to see. And that leads me to my next question of how can we awaken these parts of ourselves? And I'd love to hear also from both of you on what kind of practices you do yourself personally that keeps that wild and sacred really alive and expressing itself in your lives.
Ra, why don't you go ahead first?
Thank you, Bill. So in the work that we do at Move the Crowd, every entrepreneur goes through a process we call an L3, which is about the journey to back to vision, mission, purpose, alignment. And the three L's stand for, first, how I live, which is all about our values and what we value. How I love, which is all about our unique combination of talents, gifts, and abilities, what it is that we're here to offer, humbly offer to the world. And how I lead, which is about our purpose, which is the way that we want to leverage or use our talents and our gifts and abilities to work towards the world that we envision and that we want to see. And what's been so incredible about this process, and, you know, we've done thousands of these now, and what's been always so incredible about the process is it takes people a really long time to get to the declaration. So ultimately there's a creative process they go through, and when they come to the declarations, every word means something, and every word is generated from the most authentic place that they can access. And when they finally get those declarations, invariably they cry. Because there's a way that they see themselves that they haven't had an opportunity to see themselves or speak themselves, that they haven't had an opportunity to do that before. And I think it's, you know, Bill, everything that you're saying in terms of all of the ways that we get distracted or pulled away from those parts of ourselves that we know are who we are and we're born with it, right? They're not, you know, sort of acquired skills. These are things that we come to this planet with. And it's a returning and a remembering process that really brings people and roots people back into the core of themselves. And for us, it becomes the foundation then from which they create everything, right? Whatever they want to see or imagine in the world comes from that foundation. And it's also the place where they discern what is in alignment for them or not in alignment for them as they navigate the world. And I think that what's so important is creating spaces of practicum. I feel like we as a community, as we have these conversations, we know these ideas are so important, but so often we come out of the inspiring event or out of the inspiring moment or we close the book and then we turn back to our lives. And there's something about being able to have access to how we apply them in our lives, you know. And so one of the, you know, questions, last question I heard you ask was, you know, how do we, right, Vinit, how do I cultivate it in myself? I mean, certainly as a creative, as an artist, I create and I spend time honoring that aspect of myself. It happens to be that my medium is words and music and poetry and but even embodying movement now as a part, as I'm getting especially older now, embodying movement is a really important part of my expression. I have rituals, prayer, meditation rituals. I have rituals for being in nature, rituals for being in water, you know, rituals for the different seasons. Those are all important aspects of how I stay connected to those wild aspects of myself. Practicing courageous listening and courageous speaking. You know, taking bold action in honor of the things that matter most to me. And then most importantly, and Bill, I'd love to hear you talk more about this because I had a chance to explore more about the wild mind and I'm like, oh my God, that book is so in my hands. As soon as we get off this conversation. You know, just that the honoring of the four directions and, you know, so like I'm with you, Bill. I'm so with you here. But I do want to, you know, say that this piece about how we surround ourselves in terms of community, and I raise it again because we talk to people every day who are struggling. You know, they sort of feel like they're, you know, in this desert of thirsting for connection and thirsting for wanting to be in the truth of themselves, but they don't feel like they're surrounded in environments or with people that make it a conducive space for them to express and come out in those ways. And so I would say that community is a super, super crucial piece.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Bill?
Great. Yeah, that is beautiful. And I'm impressed by Rob, with your answer and also how succinct you're being. There's so much we both want to say in this limited time. So let's see how I can do with that succinctness. First, though, let me say that I started doing this nature-based personal development work about 35 years ago, and it became clear towards the beginning that an essential foundational piece before we could really successfully lead people to the depths of soul, which is our primary work, the foundational piece is restoring a certain kind of wholeness. That's kind of the diving platform into the depths. And that left us with the question, well, what are the various facets of our wholeness? And there's so many people that with different kind of lists of about our wholeness. And so what I did is I ended up going to a template that is found, as far as I know, in every culture, and that is used as a way to ask ourselves questions about the dimensions of the wholeness of anything. And those are the four directions, the four compass directions. And if we also add the vertical, the upper world or the sky or the underworld or the earth, and then the central place, the core place, and we have three additional ones, and those are the seven directions. And the vertical really gets us into the more transpersonal, spiritual part, and maybe I'll be able to get to that later. But just to focus on the four compass directions, when my colleagues and I mapped our, the facets of our human wholeness onto the four directions, we got this, of course, north, south, east, west aspects of ourselves. And it seemed to us right away that what became evident is that our contemporary mainstream cultures neglect or even actively suppress all four of these dimensions. So I want to mention two of them in particular, but I'll give you the names of all four. And this is this whole thing is introduced in my book, Wild Mind. So the north aspect is what we call the nurturing generative adult. And this is the part of us that is fully ready and capable of being a leader or a teacher, a manifester or an activist, a mature parent or a mentor or a healer or someone with great empathic capacities or the benevolent versions of a king or a queen, a true leader. And in the East, we have this paradoxical, unruly facet of us. And every one of us is born with all four of these facets. And one of the East we call the innocent sage, which sounds like a paradox that should. It's the part of us that is both playful in a very innocent way, just fully present to the world, and is also has this great wisdom. So I often say, think of the Dalai Lama as a being, a person who has this like childlike playfulness and also this great wisdom. And the East also brings in the archetypes of the sacred fool and the trickster, which is so important for us to lighten up and to get through difficult times, which of course the whole world is in right now. So, but the other two, the South and the East, South and the West, I want to emphasize because those seem to be most dangerous to the contemporary Western world and are actively suppressed. And interesting, the Western world has come to see these two aspects, which I'm about to tell you about, the South and the West, as feminine, and the kind of pathological adolescent masculine aspects of our culture have suppressed this feminine aspect of all of us. That, to me, it's equally masculine and feminine, but let me say what they are. The South, I call the wild indigenous one. And my longer version of it is the wild, indigenous, emotional, sexual, erotic, instinctive, enchanted one. And there's many dimensions here, but let me just mention three. The wild, indigenous aspect of ourselves, of our wholeness, loves to be embodied, loves to be in flesh the way we are, loves and fully embraces our form and our sexuality and our erotic connection with everything, absolutely everything on earth. And second, the wild indigenous one is emotional, loves the bodily experience of every single emotion. There's no such thing as a toxic emotion to the wild indigenous one. And emotions are a key to living well for this aspect of our wholeness. And the third aspect of the wild indigenous one is its experience, our experience of kinship with everything, our somatic experience of being related to everything, which of course we are. So, and this self aspect of our wholeness, the wild indigenous one, is dangerous or subversive to the contemporary Western mainstream world, because if most of us, not even all of us, but if most of us humans were fully emotionally and somatically alive and experienced our kinship naturally with everything, we couldn't possibly participate. We would not participate at all, nobody would, in the synthetic life-destroying aspects of contemporary culture. So this self aspect is so important to cultivate. And then the West I call the Muse Beloved, the Muse-Beloved, or actually I prefer to call it the Dark Muse Beloved, because the West, which is the sunset place, is where we sink into the darkness of the day and of life. And by dark I don't, of course, mean evil. I mean the unknown, the fruitful, spiritual unknown. And so the West part of us is the Muse, is the part of us that has this deep creativity and imagination and that can see deeply into everything and understands things symbolically and is able to communicate with everything can communicate with other humans without using human language and can communicate with everything else. And this West aspect of ourselves is totally comfortable with the death and decay and disintegration of things as a natural part of life. And it's the, you might say it's the poet of us and the magician of us and the part of us that loves to wander into the world and explore everything. And it's the part of us I call the soul guide that takes us down into the depths when we're ready. So what we do in our work at Animus Valley Institute is much of our foundational work is to help people cultivate their ability to stand fully and to dance wildly in all four aspects of their wholeness. And one of the, you might say the primary reason, again, we do that is that we've learned that people need to be in all four facets of their wholeness in order to successfully make this experiential dive into the underworld of soul for the purpose of finding out what we were born to do, and in particular, to find out how we were born to participate in the larger community, the Earth community. In our contemporary world, we tend to think in terms of vocation and what will my job be or what will be my social role. But when it comes time for the process of soul initiation, we're asking something more mystical, which the Animus we call mythopoetic. We're trying to find the poem that we were born to be, or the metaphor that we were born to be. And this is our place in the Earth community. Like for me, this is something I wrote about at the beginning of my first book, Soulcraft, that I learned on my first visionary experience that my task in life was to learn to weave cocoons of transformation for my people. And there was no, you know, job title or vocation that was attached to that. And the way I've learned to do that is by being a guide to the depths and by being a writer and by being a soul craft guide and earlier a psychologist and so on. So let's see. So that's some pieces.
Let me cut in here because we've only got 2 minutes left. I knew this was going to fly by. I'd love to talk with both of you for hours, but we can't do that. We've got a lot to fit in today, and we're drawing near the end of the day. So given that we've got exactly 2 minutes, I'm going to give you each 60 seconds, and please just don't go over because we can't, to just one real quick wrap-up takeaway here.
Yeah, Bill, to be continued. I just want to say that. And I also want to say that this opportunity to chart the non-traditional path, which is all about what we hold space for, and Bill, I know it's what you hold space for in the souls that you receive and engage through your work, you know, this way that we get to be off the beaten path and celebrate the opportunities to discover who we are when we can break free, you know. And I really do feel that our mission, you know, which is all about freeing people up to be in their highest contribution, is about liberation and is about supporting and creating those spaces and those sacred containers where people can come into the truth of who they are, be ignited in the truth of who they are, and then show up in the world as their full selves so that they're able to make their full contributions. And I don't know what the job description for that is either, Bill. Right? And I think more and more of us are coming to it. You know, we're coming to these places in ourselves where it's a lot of dash, hash, dash, hashtag, dash, dash, multiple identities, multiple ethnicities, multiple. We are in a multidimensional reality, and this new paradigm is about owning that, accepting that, embracing that, and that is all taking us closer to wholeness. And so I'm excited to be alive in this time. I'm excited to be doing this work in this time, and I'm excited to spend this time with you all. So thank you so much.
Fabulous. Bill, no more than 60 seconds.
Yeah, just a real few quick things about That's something I often wonder about. What are the qualities of a healthy culture? Because it's time now for us to reinvent many healthy cultures. And one criteria that's important to this this day today is a healthy culture is one that sustains life. And in some ways, I think that's the weakest criteria, but it's essential that we are able to continue this time on the planet with as many other species as possible. But a stronger criteria is that a healthy culture enhances life. Is actually that we contribute to the evolution of life. And then my favorite and for me the strongest criteria of a healthy culture is that we act as co-evolutionary partners with the dream of the Earth. And this is something that true adults, which I also call visionary artisans of cultural renaissance, true adults and true elders are people who have experienced and can feel into the dream of the Earth and can discover and do discover how to participate on the dream level in the way we live our embodied lives with the Earth's own dream and destiny.
Beautiful. Thank you, Bill and Ra, for the rich conversation. Stay tuned for the closing sessions of